Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome in, Friday edition, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. I am coming to you live from the free state of Florida. Buck would have been here if he had not gotten Omicron. He is with his scarf hanging out in his apartment almost at the end of his quarantine process. 80 degrees and sunny down here. We have got an awesome event for our listeners in the Fort Myers area. Going to be a really cool 5 to 7 o'clock Eastern here. Looking forward to meeting hundreds of our listeners down here. We've got a lot of great affiliates, Buck. You and I are going to get out and about some on the road during the course of 2022 and hopefully be able to meet a lot of our different listeners all over the country. We got an event coming up in Houston in the near future. It's great to be in Florida right now. And so much to dive into here. We got a great show lined up for you. But right off the top, again, thanks to WFSX, all of you out there listening in Southwest Florida to us on WFSX. We love you guys, and we're looking forward to having a great event this afternoon, evening here in Fort Myers. But Buck, one of the things we talked about a couple of days ago was you knew the panic was setting in the wake of a disastrous press conference for Joe Biden as all of the first year polls were coming in showing how underwater Joe Biden is. One of the craziest ones I saw, Buck, only 28% of voters nationwide want Joe Biden to run for re-election in 2024. And so there's been an attempt to manufacture a crisis. And that manufactured crisis has to be outside of the Democratic Party because we got crises with everything that's going on with the murder rate. You've got the border disaster, COVID at all-time highs. You have inflation at the high going all the way back to 1982. And so there needs to be an external focus, something that can take away attention from the Democrats and Joe Biden. And that turned into there's tension between Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis. Well, last night on Sean Hannity's show, former President Trump directed that answer as explicitly as I have seen anybody. Let's play cut one as Trump addressed his relationship with Ron DeSantis.
I get along great with Ron. Ron was very good on the Mueller hoax. He was right up front along with Jim Jordan and all of the rest of them. They were fantastic. The Republicans really stuck together. And it was a great thing, and Ron was one of them, and Ron wanted to run, and I endorsed him, and that helped him greatly, and he went on, and he's done a really terrific job in Florida, and I think, you know, Ron has been very good. He's been a friend of mine for a long time. It's totally fake news. I think Ron said last week, he said it very publicly, he says, the press is never going to get in the middle of my friendship with Donald Trump. We're not going to do that stuff. And he said it very strongly. I thought it was very interesting, actually, and very nice. But he said that, and I agree with him on that 100%.
And this is what I never bought this, Clay,
yes,
that there was some feud. It's so obvious, right? It's the oldest trick in the book for the libs to present at this point in time some open warfare breaking out between the Trump and DeSantis camps. They are terrified because, let me say this, I think they recognize, what, we have the 28% of Americans want Biden to run again. You told me that poll right before we came on air. I think they're terrified because they realize not only could Trump right now beat Biden, DeSantis right now would beat Biden. And if the two of them work together in any capacity, whoever's actually on the ticket or whatever the case may be, there's no way the Biden regime is going to get four more years, and they already know it. So they're willing to play the dirtiest tricks. These are the same people that say January 6th was an insurrection. So, yeah, they're trying to start a fight between Trump and DeSantis, and we shouldn't fall for that for a second because there's no reason for them to fight.
Well, this is what I think is going to be the big question going forward, Buck. It is, to what extent is 2022 and then later 2024, depending on exactly how it lays out, a referendum on Joe Biden? To the extent that Biden is the story and the Democratic Party is the story, which is what it should be, then Democrats are going to get destroyed because what they did in 2020 was hide Joe Biden and try to make 2020 a referendum on Trump, in particular based on COVID. And now the referendum on Biden is an unmitigated disaster. There is no way to defend Biden. In fact, Biden right now is clearly going to be the worst president pretty much of any of our lives. When you really look at how badly things are going, now maybe he can start to pull things up in the next couple of years. Maybe things won't be as bad as they are right now. But we're talking about a historically inept presidency on virtually every level. That's why I thought it was funny that Biden said, of all the ridiculous things he said in his press conference on Wednesday, Buck, the idea that he believed he had outperformed expectations is maybe the most ludicrous of everything, because even the most dyed-in-the-wool, diehard Joe Biden fan isn't willing to accept the idea that he has in some way delivered any form of excellence at all.
Jimmy Carter is one of the big winners of the Biden presidency, because I think, Clay, we've reached the point where Jimmy Carter's like, I'm much better than that guy. You know, I think Jimmy Carter has a lot of room to make the argument that Joe Biden is far less competent than even he was already. So you start with that. And then I think on the DeSantis Trump front, let's keep in mind, they want us to focus on that feud, which doesn't exist, but they want to create that feud in advance of the midterms. We're not even in the presidential cycle right now. And why is it so important for them to create this perception that there's disunity among the GOP? Because you have both Trump, who is still a very potent force among Republicans and very much able to get people fired up and mobilized. And you have Ron DeSantis, who, as governor of the state of Florida, where you are right now, where I wish I was, but, you know, COVID, he's proving the model of Republican governance in the era of COVID in a way that I think is going to be a critical component of the GOP, hopefully, shellacking that they hand out to the Democrats this fall. So we're in a midterm cycle. We're not in a presidential cycle. And so all this stuff about, oh, but, you know, DeSantis and Trump, they're trying to distract. They're trying to turn us against each other. And I was honestly so happy to hear, not surprised, but happy to hear that from Trump, just because this is the way it's got to be. We have to crush the commies this year. That is the focus.
And Buck, I would point this out to your, I think, astute observation there. We're in a midterm. What the Democrats are basically doing by trying to create conflict between Trump and DeSantis is default acknowledging that DeSantis is going to win in 2022, because he's going to be on the ballot down here in Florida, where I am, in November. And so if they're already talking about how DeSantis won't bow down to Trump in 2024, they're implicitly acknowledging, by creating that conflict this early, that 2022 is not going to be a challenge. Because remember, initially, Buck, in the early days of COVID, they tried to argue, we're going to knock DeSantis out. The way he has run the state of Florida is going to leave him vulnerable, and we're going to beat him in 2022, because an off-year election, Florida isn't voting in the same time as a presidential election. He narrowly won in 2018, and they were thinking, hey, we're going to knock him out as a viable national candidate by beating him in 2022. Now, just based on this narrative cycle, they are implicitly acknowledging, hey, he's going to win, and it may not even be very close. Let's go ahead and try to create angst between Trump and DeSantis. They're already a narrative cycle ahead. They're already effectively acknowledging the butt kicking that they are going to get in 2022 and trying to serve up some protection for 2024.
Yeah, I mean, the person that's running, as I understand it, against Ron DeSantis for the, you know, on the Democrat side for governor, is pretty unserious. Nikki Fried, who's the Florida Commissioner of Agriculture. Also, my Florida friends tell me that this is one of the worst years in memory for the citrus harvest, which which is a big deal in Florida, you know, for obvious reasons. It is the sunshine state. It is the citrus state in many ways. And so Ron DeSantis, yeah, you're right. He's probably going to be, he looks like he's a shoo-in for governor, but keep in mind, adding to all that is all the people who have moved to Florida,
no doubt,
who are overwhelmingly going to be DeSantis supporters. And so this now becomes a state that is looking like it isn't just a little bit, it is going to be solidly red for the foreseeable future. And it's in direct contravention of what they were telling us was going to happen early on. I remember this. You remember this, the pandemic. They were like, just wait and see what happens in Florida.
Yeah.
Just wait till all the mayhem and the unmasked destruction that will go on. Yeah, if by that you mean hundreds of thousands of people running to Florida saying, please, please, can I live here instead of the psycho lib state of either, usually it's California, New York, maybe New Jersey, a few other places. That's what's been occurring. So we've run the experiment, Florida won, and now what do we do with that political momentum? That's what I think remains to be seen, and that's why I'm so glad DeSantis and Trump are going to be working together on this.
Buck, I'll tell you this. When I walked outside of the Fort Myers airport, it's not as big of a deal for me, obviously, because I live in Nashville, which is also a free state inside of Tennessee. But the number of people from the East Coast walking outside of the airport and ripping off their masks the moment they walked outside of the airport, it's like seeing people suddenly being able to cross the Berlin Wall back in the day. You know, if you were coming from East Germany to West Germany and you could just feel the freedom sort of emanating everywhere, there's a joy and a glee and a euphoria that you will see when those East Coast airplanes land in Florida and people come walking out of the airport, rip off their masks, breathe the, you know, warm air, and they're like, oh my God, I'm free again.
I feel like Andy Dufresne in Shawshank, but instead of sewage, it's communism that's dripping off of me, and I'm walking out into the free sunshine of the state of Florida every time I leave that airport. It is a remarkable feeling. It is absolutely the closest thing to feeling like you're crossing over the actual Iron Curtain back in the 1950s or the 1960s. And everybody who's lived in both places knows it. You're no safer in New York than you are in Florida. In fact, the opposite recently when it comes to COVID. So what's all the nonsense about? But people, I think a lot of this is driven, Clay, not only by fear, but by ego, because increasingly there's this whole class of elites who elevated Fauci into this high priest status, never really thought about, is this guy really that smart? Does he have a good track record? Does he actually understand policy in a way that is going to be for the benefit of the American people? Or is he just kind of making it up as he goes along? A lot of them, I think, now don't want to admit, even as the UK has said, we are done with masks and mandates, you know, yes. Even as they're deciding it's all over there. I can't do Boris Johnson's got a very particular kind of accent, so I can't work on that one. But here we are. And yet Fauciism is doubling down. I mean, Clay's talking about vaccines for 5 year olds and five and under. I'm sorry. So your 2 and 3 year olds in Fauci world, they're going to start getting the shot next month. I just had Omicron. That is completely insane. It is completely insane to do that to kids.
I'm not anti-vax. My kids are not getting COVID shots. They're not. First of all, I think they probably had it. We need to go get them antibody tested. If I've had COVID twice, if my wife has had COVID, the odds are that they had COVID in our house and we just never knew. And I know there's a lot of parents out there that know exactly what I'm talking about. But the idea that we would get them an experimental, in many ways, vaccine that is not working, by the way, for Omicron right now, according to the Pfizer CEO himself, and when natural immunity worked better against Delta, according to the CDC now, than the COVID vaccine did, no way that that I'm getting my kid shot like that. How would you like, by the way, Buck, some extra breathing room in your household budget? Maybe extra $500,000 a month? It's possible when you consider a mortgage refinance. We're still seeing rates near record lows. This savings could come from a phone call with our team and our friends at American Financing. Take advantage of a free mortgage review to see how much you can save, because there's more to a refinance than just a lower monthly payment. It's also the ability to save tens of thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Pick up the phone, get the refinance process started. You don't want to miss out on these great rates, and you could save up to $12,000 a year with these guys, and all it would take is as little as 10 minutes, and within 10 days, you could be saving a bundle. Buck, how do they do it?
Call American Financing right now, 800-777-8109. Just so you all know, I'm actually closing on my loan with American Financing this week. I just set the closing date. So they're the best when it comes to customer service. I got a fantastic rate. They made the whole process so easy and transparent. If you're refinancing, this is who you got to go with. 800-777-8109 or visit AmericanFinancing.net. That's AmericanFinancing.net. NMLS 182334. NMLSConsumerAccess.org.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. We roll into the weekend, Friday edition of the program. Encourage you to go subscribe to the podcast. You can search out my name, Clay Travis. You can search out Buck Sexton. Go give us 5 stars. Help us set another all-time record for downloads in January. I feel very good about that being a strong likelihood. Set a lot of records as we roll in through 2022. and get ready for all the midterms and all of the insanity that is likely to come from that. In the meantime, we're going to be joined or scheduled to be joined here shortly by Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. But I just saw, Buck, that he tweeted out that he's not going to be a member of the Capital Club anymore because they require a COVID vaccine in order to be a member. And I know we talked a little bit about new, we've got him now, I believe, Senator Rand Paul with us. Senator Paul, appreciate you joining us. I just saw you tweet about the Capital Club and your decision there. Senator, with the conjunction of the CDC finally admitting that natural immunity was more protective by October of 2021 than was the COVID vaccine, and with the Pfizer CEO saying that the first two doses of the Pfizer vaccine do not actually provide limited, if any, protection against Omicron, how in the world is there any logical foundation for vaccine mandates any longer?
There's zero, but we have to stand up for ourselves. For goodness sakes, the Capitol Hill Club, I think, is owned by the Republican Party. They would probably lose less money by hiring an attorney to fight the mayor and the city than they will by all of us leaving the Capitol Hill Club. So, you know, I'm also fighting the mandates for all of D.C. D.C. is under the rule of Congress, and I've introduced legislation to get rid of the mandates and say, look, we're going to have a free city. But they're destroying the city. I mean, all the restaurants around the Capitol are being destroyed. There are no tourists in D.C. The Capitol's still closed because Nancy Pelosi is protecting us against the next insurrection. I mean, they're destroying our nation's capital, and someone's got to somehow speak some sense to these people.
Senator Rand Paul, it's Buck. We always appreciate you being with us. I wanted to bring something to your attention. I'm sure you're familiar with some of the work done by Alex Berenson. You know, he wrote Pandemia, and he's just been following the data very closely. He recently put out on his Substack some data from the hospital, the General Hospital of San Francisco, or San Francisco General Hospital. And it showed that over 70%, and this is just in one hospital, but as a microcosm, I think it's interesting. Over 70% of those in the hospital in San Francisco that he spoke of for were actually vaccinated for COVID. And we're wondering if you see any of this, because early on during this wave, we were being told that in some states, in Massachusetts at one point, it was, you know, 30% of people in the hospital were vaccinated. We keep hearing that it's only the unvaccinated that are at risk, but there doesn't seem to be good data, and some of the data seems to go against that. I just wanted you to weigh in on this.
Well, the thing they're not being honest about is that virtually everybody who's at risk has been vaccinated. The CDC's own statistics say that those over 65, it's somewhere between 95 to 97% of the public's been vaccinated. So it's kind of hard not to have a majority of the people in the hospital be vaccinated. The thing is that really the vaccination, voluntary vaccination, has been overwhelmingly successful, but it's never enough for these people. That's why if you give into a mandate, then if you give into the mandate for 10-year-olds, they'll want to do 5-year-olds. If you give into 5-year-olds, they'll want to do newborns. But what they're really ignoring, and the thing that people should be alarmed with, is they are ignoring the comparison of risk factor of the disease versus the risk of the vaccine, particularly for children and particularly for adolescent males. And I think this is really a crime. You have, and really, people should go to the court system. Princeton, Yale, University of Chicago are actually advocating a mandate for something that is very unhealthy and risky for your adolescent male, for your 18, 20-year-old male. The risk of a problem from the vaccine is greatly exceeds any risk they have from the disease. And it's really a crime against these children that prominent universities in our country are mandating something that is a complete malpractice as far as I'm concerned.
We're talking to Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. Senator, I'm sure you saw Boris Johnson in England has ended the national mask mandate and the vaccine mandates in order to be able to enter businesses from a federal perspective over there. How long do you think it might be till Joe Biden and the Democrats are willing to do such a thing? And if they're not willing to do such a thing, what can you guys in Congress do to help combat this?
Well, I think public opinion on hypocrisy goes a long way. You know, it's so many of these people who have been willing to invoke these mandates on us are unwilling to obey their own mandates, and I think that's hurt their cause. But we have to push back. We have to, all of us, put back. We have to, you know, quit frequenting. Do not go to a restaurant and call up your favorite restaurant if they want papers and say, I'm not revealing my medical records to go to your restaurant. That's what we all need to do. Ultimately, economic pressure works and it will end. But there's also becoming a dichotomy. We end up having a free part of our country and totalitarian zones up north. I mean, Florida is a free zone, so people are moving to Florida by droves. People are vacationing. Even AOC can't have a good time in New York, so she's got to go to Florida. But this is what happened. People have to vote with their feet and with their dollars, and they have to flee these places. Some of it's happening. I mean, it's one of the reasons Congress is going to flip, is that population movement over the last several years is they're fleeing New York and California for freedom. And now they're doing it for vacation because you can't live your life. But it's utter stupidity that we allow these people who aren't using science. It's just their authoritarian impulse causes them to want new mandates. But really, the science is against all this. Everybody is getting the Omicron. Everybody's probably going to get it. Masks are completely useless. They're now admitting it. But you know what I fear? Is that they're going to mandate the N95. Instead of admitting that the mandates on masks haven't done a thing to the disease, they're going to mandate an even harsher mask is what's probably going to come from these morons.
Senator Paul, just, you know, I have Omicron right now, and Clay had it last week. So to your point about everyone's going to get it, I mean, it's all over the place. And these mandates obviously haven't done a damn thing to slow this down. It's ridiculous. Do you think that we're going to get to a place where, after tens of millions at a minimum of Americans have had Omicron, within 60 days, we're going to start being told you need to get an Omicron shot now? Because I think Pfizer is coming out with their Omicron specific vaccine in March. I've been telling Clay, I'm worried that these people are so maniacal. They're going to say, oh, you just had Omicron, come get your Omicron shot or else.
Yeah. The good news about Omicron for most people, and I'm not saying for everybody, but for most people who get through it, you've basically had a live attenuated vaccine. It is nature's vaccine, and it's a much less deadly virus than the previous iteration. Now, there's still people dying, so I mean, we still need to try to protect those who are dying, but it's primarily people with multiple diseases, people over a certain age group, and absolutely people overweight. And people need to monitor their symptoms. Even with Omicron, if you are getting worse in the first 5 days, that is your window of time when you need to seek treatment. And this is something you'll never hear from Fauci or anybody in the government. They say vaccination's it, and then you're fine. They don't tell you that you can still get sick if you're vaccinated, but that there is a treatment. There are multiple treatments, but you need to get them in the first five, maybe the first 10 days. But nobody is telling you that. The monoclonal antibodies that do work well, if you wait till day 8, 9, 10, 11, they don't work as well. And often the hospital won't even give them to you at that point. So this is the thing we need to know. We need to protect the vulnerable. This is what the Great Barrington Declaration was about. It's what these smart epidemiologists that are practicing and preaching some truth are telling us. Protect those who are vulnerable, but tell them there are treatments and not just to sit at home doing nothing.
Senator Paul, when is Dr. Fauci going to be gone from his position? How do we get rid of him?
The day after the election in November 2022, my suspicion is he will retire. Either way, even if he does retire, we are going to subpoena every one of his records. We are going to get to the bottom of where the virus came from. And I plan on having hearings on not only domestic rules on not creating these viruses that don't exist in nature that could be potentially deadly. I'm going to ask to, once we can get our domestic house in order and we're no longer doing it, we shouldn't fund China. But I really think there needs to be an international convention of civilized nations to come together, kind of like we've done with chemical weapons and also how we've done with nuclear proliferation. They're not perfect, but I think we could get hundreds of nations to come together and say, look, we just had 5-10 million people die from something that probably came from a lab. Can we not all sort of agree voluntarily not to do this type of research? This is what really has to happen, and this has been my main beef with Fauci. It's not about, you know, I'm right and he's wrong, which is largely true, but it's not all about that. It's about trying to prevent this from happening again.
Senator Rand Paul, we appreciate it.
Of Kentucky, thank you so much, sir. Appreciate you being with us.
You don't just vote at election time. You vote every month with the money you spend and the companies you spend it with. Consider your cell phone provider and the bill you're paying this month. That payment supports the candidates and issues they choose to donate to. You'll be surprised and disappointed by the candidates they're supporting. Just leave it at that. But there's a solution. It's Pure Talk. Get your cell phone service from Pure Talk. They use the exact same towers, the exact same 5G network as one of those companies making those donations to left-leaning candidates with liberal agendas. Pure Talk not only provides you with great cell phone service at a better price, but you get the peace of mind you're supporting a veteran-run business. Buck, how do people get hooked up?
It's so easy. It's so straightforward. Right now, from your cell phone, dial pound 250. From your phone right now, dial pound 250 and just say the words Pure Talk. You'll save an additional 50% off your first month. That's dial pound 250, say Pure Talk. Welcome back into the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. We are going to talk economics for a second here. The money in your bank account, your wages, the job market, inflation, how expensive is that cheeseburger you're hopefully going to get to eat tonight or whatever you choose. We have someone who can shed light on all of that with us now. Art Laffer. You'll remember him as a former Reagan economic advisor and, you know, the Laffer curve. Art is with us now. Sir, great to have you.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being with you.
Can we just have you react, because I think this is a good way to get us started here, to Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo here on what a great economy this is. Play it.
Well, it's not that great. I mean, we have a shortage of labor. In fact, the number of people employed today is way below what it was before the pandemic occurred. What we have is participation rates are about the lowest rate then. We've caused all sorts of people to leave the labor force. Now, they're not unemployed. They just left and went home because we're giving them so much in the way of transfer payments and welfare that they're just better off being unemployed than they are
Here we go. We actually have the sound bite for you. So cut 13, play it.
As you say, these are, you know, strong numbers. By any measure now, we have a strong economy, you know, created over 6 million jobs last year. We're the only economy in the world that is stronger now than pre-pandemic. And the unemployment rate has fallen like a rock over the past year. So we look at those numbers. I mean, week to week, month to month, there are small variations, but it's a strong employment picture. You know, wages are up, jobs are up, growth is up. As you say, you know, obviously we have inflation, and that is what we have to deal with.
All right. I mean, just the 6 million jobs created. Can you dive into that for a second? Because that doesn't seem to pass the smell test.
Well, no, we lost about, if I'm using the numbers correctly here, we now lost something like 9 million in the pandemic, and now we've come back 6 million back, but it's not increasing any longer. We've come back there, so we're still 3 million jobs short of what we were at the before the pandemic, and we've had population growth since then. So as far as participation rates, we're way below where we were prior to the pandemic. It's been collapsing for a long time, and it's really shown a very sharp deterioration. So people have just left the labor force. They don't want to work because they're getting paid all these monies from the government. That's what's happening. And when she says that you have these wages rising, that's true. Wages went up 4% or something. Now, wages went up 4% and inflation went up 7%. If you like that calculation, I've got a bridge to sell you. The real wages are going down in this country because of inflation, and all of that's happening. And I just don't know where she got her PhD, but she didn't take it in my class.
We're talking to Art Lab.
It's just a misuse of numbers. I just hate it when people do that because it's not true, and it leads you to know something that's not correct.
Did we fail Art Laffer as an economist that we did not bring your discipline into a discussion surrounding shutdowns? We made only the experts in health involved. When you look at it purely from an economic perspective, how would you assess the decisions made surrounding COVID from a shutdown, a lockdown, a taking kids out of school perspective?
You know, what I did was I looked at the growth in the economy from up through February of 2020, all right, and then just dot-lined that growth going forward, and how much real GDP have we lost because of the pandemic, the lockdowns, the masks, all that stuff put together, including the transfer payments. It's a huge, huge, huge amount. And I don't remember exactly what those numbers were. I wish I had my paper in front of me, but it's an enormous amount, something like a third of all GDP. And we're below the trend line where we were. Not only below the trend line, but it's growing slower. GDP growth is not keeping up with past numbers. And it didn't catch up the way it should have. So all of this counting growth and jobs from the bottom to the bottom to where we are now, it's way below what we should have had in job growth just to catch back up to where we were in February of 2020. It's, you know, we've got a long way to go to catch up, and then we've got a long way to go to make up for the losses that we had. This is not a pretty picture. I'm sorry to say, and I wish they wouldn't say it, but they keep saying that does anyone think their wages are really going up just because they get a dollar increase in wages and the price of goods you buy goes up $2? I don't think so.
We're speaking to Art Laffer, former Reagan economic advisor. And Art, so what would happen if they actually, we keep hearing from Biden, one of the primary talking points for how this is all going to turn around is that the Build Back Better plan will make everything cheaper, which to those of us who are looking at inflation and government spending and the relationship thereof say, what do they not get here? But is can you explain to us exactly what their argument is and whether it holds water?
Well, I'll try to. I mean, you know, have you ever heard of a poor person spending himself into wealth?
Of course not.
What they're proposing. We have a bad economy, and we want to take resources away from people who work and give them to people who don't work. And, you know, if you tax people who work and pay people who don't work, you're going to get a lot of people not working. And that is exactly what's happened in the U.S. economy. The only thing is they're not going on the unemployment rolls. That's true. They're going home and taking their payment checks and living nicely without working and without even trying to work.
So what should we be doing from your perspective? You talked about the graph that you did starting back in February of 2020. Things were on fire in the Trump economy. Everything was working well. And then COVID arrived, almost like a neutron bomb that goes off there. What should we be doing right now if we wanted to try to get back to the growth trajectory that we had in February of 2020?
Let me first say what I think we should have done then.
Okay.
We should have had one bill of maybe $1 trillion, maybe less than that, just one, not the $3.5 trillion that was done then by the president and Congress, and not the $3.2 trillion that was done by Biden when he forgot into, and not the $6 trillion that he wants to do with Build Back Better, just one bill to do Operation Warp Speed. Find that cure, find the remedies as fast as you possibly can. Trump did that beautifully. It was just a wonderful use of government and government resources to find a solution to a problem really quickly. He deregulated the healthcare industries and the laboratories and all of that. And we got a vaccine within a year. That's incredible. We got all these other remedies as well. All this other stuff that was just unbelievable. That's all that should have been done. Now, there are people who lost their jobs. That's true. But everyone lost. And, you know, whenever you transfer money, if you take from someone who's rich and you give the money to someone who's poor, by taking from the rich person, you're going to reduce that person's incentives to work, and he's going to work less. She's going to work less. If you give it to someone who's poor, you provide them with an alternative source of income, and they, too, are going to work less. Whenever you transfer resources, you cause a reduction in output, employment, and production, and that's just what we've done in the last 2 years, 2.5 years. And it's terrible, and you're seeing the consequences everywhere. It's not an unemployment rate. You've got a supply-side problem now. People don't want to work because they're getting paid too much by the government, and they don't feel the necessity of having to go to work. And it's going to inure very detrimentally to the long-term prosperity of the U.S., believe me when I tell you.
If you could get, Art, before we let you go, 60 seconds or so with Biden and whoever actually makes the decisions in this White House around him, but let's just say we'll stipulate Biden and his top advisors in the Oval Office, and just for the good of the American economy, the American people, what would you tell him to do that you think theoretically the Democrats may be willing to go along with or at least consider if they get crushed this fall?
Well, the one thing I think that the Democrats may be willing to consider that would be very good was have a payroll tax rate reduction. I mean, just reduce the payroll tax to half of what it is now. And then you would incentivize workers to come back to work, and you would be able to increase their incentive to go. I was hoping to get one comment with you on Ukraine, though, if you guys are interested in one quick comment.
Sure.
Because, you know, when you look at Ukraine, and I've been there, I've spent some time there, and I'm passably knowledgeable on it. You know, the damage is already done with the troops. You know, a credible threat, as the Soviets have posed on the border, achieves what a military victory could only achieve, but it does it without the use of force. Who's going to invest in the Ukraine today? No one. I don't care what happens on the border there. No one's going to invest. Ukraine has already been disastrously damaged. If you'll remember, before Poroshenko, the Yukhanovich was a pro-Russian president of the Ukraine. Now, Zelensky now is not. But with this type of pressure on the Ukraine, there is no way from Sunday they're going to come back and be a productive, healthy nation for a long, long time.
Art, really quick question. I told my kids that I would ask you about this. How has Ferris Bueller changed your life, the fact that you are mentioned in that movie?
I loved it. I mean, it was sort of fun. I enjoyed it very, very much. I mean, I was caught flat-footed when I saw it the first time. I know Ben Stein. I knew his father very well, but my kids loved it, too. I've got six kids. I've got 13 grandchildren, four great-grandchildren. They love that scene. I just play it over and over and over again for them. But it did bother me, if I may say, all those students sitting there with their faces on the desk, drooling all over the desk and not paying attention. I mean, in my classes, I'd have snapped them out of that.
There we go. Art Laffer, everybody. Great question, Clay. Art, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks. Talk to you.
For many folks, this is the end of another busy work week. And how many of you woke up today and found yourself contending with pain? You don't have to have the most of demanding physical jobs to feel that pain. You know that. It can come as the result of aging, exercise, overexertion, just everyday living. But there is a solution out there. It's called Relief Factor. Created by doctors and perfected over 15 years of scientific research, Relief Factor was made for you. With four key ingredients, Relief Factor is a 100% drug-free product which addresses joint, knee, hip, back, neck, and shoulder pain. Hundreds of thousands of people have ordered Relief Factor, and about 70% of them go on to order more. If you're currently in pain and you have a 7 in 10 chance to eliminate it, those are pretty good odds, right? And what do you have to lose? Look, Joshua in New Jersey took his chances with Relief Factor. He shares the most unusual story. He was in pain for years after being hit by a van while crossing the street in NYC. Taking Relief Factor, he felt good for the first time in years. He could play with his children again. Feels like he got his life back. Clay, how do our people get hooked up?
Join the more than 500,000 people and order the 3-week quick start for only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. The $19.95 3-week quick start developed for you, relieffactor.com, or you can call 800-4-RELIEF. Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. Man, he was good. Art Laffer, great economist.
He's like the mailman. He always delivers.
Oh, he was fantastic. And we're going to play you that cut. For those of you out there who may not be familiar with the final question that I was asking him about the Ferris Bueller related, that is one of the most iconic moments in 1980s movies. And his name being dropped in there, I think he mentioned he has six kids, 13 grandkids, four great-grandkids. And the fact that they, to a large extent, have embraced that doesn't surprise me at all. Because he was such a young guy when he was advising Ronald Reagan, and the impact of his economic theories have been so monumental. It really is a shame that people like Art are not more involved right now. And to his point, Buck, I think it's a really good one. They are selling you a bill of goods when they try to say, hey, this is the fastest economic expansion we've ever seen. No. When we made 10 million people not work, you don't get credit for 6 million of those people coming back to work, because we're still talking about, I think it's 3.6 million people that had jobs in February of 2020 that are not working today. That's a monumental detriment in terms of our overall economic policy.
I mean, think about it this way. It's as though the Biden administration, after mandating all these different COVID restrictions, and as we know, they were able to use their leverage with federal funding for hospitals to get hospitals to go along with this and all across the board. But just in general, the Democrat Party, even more broadly, said, we're shutting down restaurants, we're shutting down sports arenas, all these things that have happened during the Biden presidency at different stages and in different ways. if you shut down all the restaurants in a city and then you get and then you open them back up, you don't get to say I'm the greatest restaurateur in the history of this city. Like, that doesn't work, you know, and that's basically what they're doing with job creation. They're like, okay, well, now you can have your job again. You didn't create that job. You just stopped stealing that job from the people who had it.
And it wasn't your economic policies that led to those people being able to come back to work. If anything, your policies have made the recovery even slower. We have that clip, by the way. I'm a huge fan of Ferris Bueller. If by chance there is anyone out there listening to us right now that has never watched Ferris Bueller's Day Off, you should. But this is what Art Laffer getting name dropped in during the economics lecture sounded like in that movie.
Today, we have a similar debate over this. Anyone know what this is, class? Anyone? Anyone? Anyone seen this before? The Laffer curve. Anyone know what this says? It says that at this point on the revenue curve, you will get exactly the same amount of revenue as at this point.
So the argument, obviously, which was underlying so much of Ronald Reagan's economics, was if you cut taxes and deregulate, you are going to end up with more tax revenue as a result of the growth that will instill from the lower tax rates, which, by the way, I think is right. And Donald Trump policies, Buck, and this is what's so frustrating about when COVID hit, is frustrating on so many different levels. But if you go back and look at February of 2020, right before COVID hit, we had the lowest unemployment rate in modern history. We had the highest wage growth, white, black, Asian, Hispanic, didn't matter. Everybody was benefiting. We had a surging economy, the likes of which we frankly had never seen before in the history of America. His policies were working so well, in fact, Buck, that even today, as we're talking in almost February of 2022, 2 years later, we still haven't gotten back to where we were in February of 2020.
Well, this is why, I mean, the commies, the Democrat Marxists in our midst, it's really a faith-based tradition for them, actually, that they're relying on. And I can give you an example of this, right? Because, Clay, you're talking about the results that we all felt that were real, that actually happened, that people could see and feel. But what was the truth of the Obama administration? At one point, you'll remember, it was posed to then-President Obama, well, if raising taxes is going to hurt growth, productivity, and jobs, isn't that a bad idea? And he would just say, it's the right thing to do. Essentially, punishing people with greater taxation, even if it hurts the broader economy, is a function of morality, not a function of economics. And when you start to see that that is the primary motivation for a lot of what the Democrats do, this idea they're going to create greater fairness, even if they have to make greater misery to get us there, that's why it doesn't matter what the results under Trump were. That's why the fact that they kept saying he would crash the... Remember the Paul Krugman, the night of the election? Oh, the Dow is down, or, you know, futures are down 500 points back in 2016. Trump's economy was phenomenal. They don't care. They want to be in charge, and they want to tax you more because, as Obama said, Clay, it's the right thing to do.
We're going to come back third hour, final hour of the week, Buck. We've got Ian Miller. We share a lot of his graphs on the failure of our pandemic response. He's got a book coming out, but I think you guys are going to enjoy just some raw data. That's coming up to close out the final hour of the program. We appreciate you hanging out with us. Go subscribe to the podcast. Make sure you don't miss a single moment out there. This is the Clay and Buck Show.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. I hope all of you are having fantastic Fridays. Hope you're going to have spectacular weekends. Going to go check out NFL playoff game in my hometown of Nashville. Cincinnati Bengals coming to town, taking the boys. Hopefully the Titans can win a game. We bring in now Ian Miller, who I found online because he does such incredible data analysis and graphs. He's at IanMSC. I just tweeted out his handle. If you are active on social media, I encourage you to follow him. Ian, you take a great deal of glee in pointing out the absurdity of mask and vaccine mandates in terms of stopping the spread of COVID in any way. When did you start to make these graphs, and how much viewership have your graphs gotten over time? Do you have any real idea? You're doing the Lord's work here and sharing this stuff.
Well, thank you very much. I started doing it, I would say, last summer. I was really when it really took off. I know it's the numbers are pretty crazy. You know, Twitter has a it shows you with the analytics, and it's, you know, it's tens of millions of views per month, which is fantastic. And you know, I know it's gotten into the hands of some very influential political people, leaders, and politicians. So I've been very humbled and grateful that it's done as well as it has.
Ian, you know, we've got this book out this week, Unmasked, The Global Failure of COVID Mask Mandates. That's like one of my favorite book titles I've been able to read out loud in a long time, because as I was just describing, I am an anti-masking fanatic. I think that this is insane and horrifying, and it's a mass hysteria and has been from the very beginning. What are some of, as you know, this is still highly contentious, and there are a lot of people who think of themselves as very smart. They're not. But they have big perches in the media and in government who still take it as effectively settled science that mask mandates work. You've got this book, Unmasked. You're looking at all the data. Just give us some of your best stuff. I mean, what are some of your best punches at the Fauciite mask madness?
Right. Well, I think one of the best examples is in California, where, you know, you have Los Angeles, which has been as devoted to this as anybody. And Los Angeles has essentially been under a mask mandate since April of 2020 and has some of the highest, you know, COVID case rates in the world, death rates in the world as well. And people, the LA County Public Health Department just recently put out a press release saying that they've measured businesses, went around and had 95% plus of people were wearing masks. And LA reported one of the highest individual case rates that we've seen anywhere in the United States recently. So they're measuring it as everybody's wearing it. It's still not working. The numbers are still skyrocketing through the roof. And there's many examples of that, but that's one of my favorites, just because we know for a fact that everybody's complying here in California, and it's not working.
So if it's not working, we saw in England, and you can say, well, it's because Boris Johnson is under a great deal of political pressure, but it's almost like that pressure gave him the confidence to finally do what the data has shown him for a long time, which is to eliminate their national mask mandate and also to eliminate their vaccine passports. The data is the exact same, if not more so, in the United States. When will any politician on the Democratic side of the aisle, in your opinion, based on what you are seeing, actually have the confidence to say anything similar to what Boris Johnson said?
It's a great question. I don't know that it's going to happen anytime soon. Jared Polis from Colorado was the closest, and he basically said, you know, other states have done this. We're not seeing better results there. It requires a willingness to kind of admit that everything that they were doing for the last 2 years didn't work and never worked. And that is very tough for politicians to do. And I think Boris Johnson had he was getting criticism from his own side of the aisle. And unfortunately, Democrats are not criticizing each other. You know, they're not saying we should end mask mandates. They're just doing more of it. We're going to send 400 million N95 masks out there, which will be just as useless as the other ones. If you're following me on Twitter, you've seen I posted Germany already does this. They already have N95 mandates in cases there are at record highs right now. So I don't know when that's going to happen. I hope it's soon, but I don't see it happening anytime soon right now.
Ian, that's very interesting, because, you know, early on, some of the mask studies, if anyone actually bothered to read studies of that are on the CDC website and were peer-reviewed, control-studied mask situations, it showed that cloth masks are essentially against, whether it's measles or the flu, cloth masks are a joke. They don't really do anything. But there was always this belief that, well, N95 masks, because unlike cloth masks, at least the basic aerodynamics and mechanics of this might line up, right? That the opening in the mask fibers is small enough that a virus wouldn't freely pass through it. But it sounds like what you're telling me is that even in Germany, where they did the N95 mask mandate upgrade, which is currently fashionable among Fauciites in America, that it didn't, there was no discernible difference in caseload in Germany after the N95 mask. Is that right?
That's correct. And you can go and look, and a couple of their provinces, or excuse me, states already, you know, had N95 mandates, and some only had surgical grade mask mandates. And the ones with the surgical mask mandates have done better than those with the N95 mandates. There's just no difference, and we've seen this play out all over the world. But it, even when you compare real world data, and obviously a lot of these studies are, you know, were very well done, but some are also just mechanistic lab studies where, oh, we think it might work in the lab, but then when you get into the real world, if it's not fitted properly, it's still going to have aerosols leaking out from the sides. And so it's not totally surprising, but in the real world, it hasn't made any difference at all.
We're talking to Ian Miller. We encourage you to go check out his book, which is Unmasked, A Global Failure of COVID Mask Mandates. Also, you can check him out, read his Substack, Unmasked, which is also fantastic, at IanMSC on Twitter. So we know that we have failed. We know that many Western democracies have failed in our response to COVID. Who has done the best job? Which country, based on, you look at a lot of this data and analyze so many different countries, based on what you've seen, who's done the best job maintaining normalcy while still responding in some way to COVID? What was the optimal response country that you could point to?
The obvious answer would be Sweden. I think that they've done the best job. They haven't been perfect, and their leaders would tell you, you know, we made some mistakes early on with nursing homes, but you know, they never mandated masks. They never enforced mask usage. They didn't have strict lockdowns. It was much more voluntary, you know, some capacity limits, things like that. They tried as much to keep normal life going without making COVID the sole focus of all of their policy. And I think they succeeded, and the results show that, you know, and I post this or you know, write about it in the book, but they're in the, right now, I think they're around 60th in the world in mortality rate, which is unexceptional. I mean, much countries that did lockdowns like Peru and mask mandates, Peru is the highest death rate in the world. And so they've disrupted their social life, they disrupted their economic life, did all the mask mandates and the lockdowns, and had significantly worse results. Whereas Sweden tried to avoid all that. They've really followed the all of the guidance pre-COVID, what they said to do, and it worked out just fine for them. They did just fine.
I want to know something, Ian. Do you get a lot of, you know, one of the things that's been interesting for both Clay and me this entire pandemic are the doctors who will reach out behind the scenes and say, you know, I can't say this publicly because they'll go after my license or my hospital will take away my privileges and all this stuff. But, you know, what you guys said about X or Y, usually in criticism of Fauci, is true. And a lot of our colleagues in the medical community know it's true. I'm wondering what that's been like for you as a guy who's just very you have this very direct approach of the data. You know, you're just using the actual CDC numbers and data and visual and letting people visualize it by putting out these graphs. Do you have a lot of medical people reaching out to you? And also, do you have people who reach out to you and say, who are MDs, who say, wow, you know, now that I see this, masks really don't do a damn thing?
Yeah, that has happened. It is surprising. And I think one thing people forget is that a lot of times doctors, you know, they're busy, they're seeing patients, they're working, they're not really looking at a lot of the data. And a lot of times the doctors that we see on Twitter that are just kind of parroting the Fauci narrative, you know, they're just repeating what influential people are saying. They don't really go and look at the actual research themselves very often. So it has been gratifying to hear people that said, you know, I didn't really look at this. I just kind of listened to what everybody else was saying, but now seeing it, I understand it's not working, and I'm trying to incorporate that into my own practice. Or, you know, and I've had people reach out about contributing to lawsuits and things like that. So it's been really gratifying to hear from people and validating to hear that a lot of experts do agree with this, and they just can't speak out publicly for fear of retribution, which is just insane.
Well, the book is Unmasked, The Global Failure of COVID Mask Mandates. I'm going to get a copy and just keep it on my wall, you know, keep it right there just so I can stare at it all the time because I hate these mask mandates. Ian Miller, everybody, check him out. Ian MSC on Twitter. Ian, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Look, this has been another whirlwind week on Wall Street, reminding us one more time that protecting the value of your savings account is against economic factors far out of your control. You can protect the value of your hard-earned savings and your IRA as well. You do that by purchasing gold. I'm talking about real gold as part of your savings plan. That protection, the purchase of gold, which has proven over time to only grow in value, particularly when our dollar is losing value. And that certainly happened over the last 12 months. Our partners at the Oxford Gold Group are who I've relied on for the purchase of gold and precious metals. They've made it easy to take actual physical possession of gold that I've purchased. I'm talking about holding real gold in your hands. It's a memorable moment, by the way, the first time you do it. Buying real gold is not complicated. Call the Oxford Gold Group. They'll explain everything to you. Having real gold delivered to your home or having real gold as part of your IRA is just a phone call away with Oxford Gold. Call them at 833-404-GOLD and learn how you can have real gold in your IRA and delivered to your door. That's the Oxford Gold Group at 833-404-GOLD, 833-404-G-O-L-D.